Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Demystifying Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports. Before we begin, let's start with a quick refresher on what we covered in the last episode, PBIS Part 1. So if you'll remember, we think of PBIS as a triangle. Tier 1 is the base of that triangle, and it is the foundation for all interventions and supports. So everyone receives Tier 1 interventions and supports while at school. Regardless of disability or diagnosis, Tier 1 supports our school-wide support. All students get it. It's the consistent rules, expectations, routines, positive reinforcement systems that are used across the entire school building. So in this, schools teach expected behaviors the same way that they teach reading or math. Acknowledge students when they show these behaviors. So for example, saying something like, thank you for walking in the hallway. Thank you for walking safely in the hallway. I see you using those walking feet. Schools use consistent consequences and positive reinforcements. And they also collect data to see how students are doing. You can also think of Tier 1 as teaching everyone the rules of the game before expecting them to play it. So before, we always want to teach the behavior that we want to see. So if that's Tier 1, then what happens when some students need more support? That's where Tier 2 is going to start to come in. Tier 2, so the middle portion of that triangle, where some students are receiving targeted interventions and supports. That's designed for students who aren't responding to Tier 1 alone. These students, in some cases, might not have major behavior issues, but maybe they're frequently off task, having a hard time with social skills, struggling with anxiety, missing a lot of class time, or getting frequent office referrals with or without a behavioral intervention plan. Tier 2 is for those kids who are at risk of needing more help, but with the right support, they can potentially get back on track. So some key features of Tier 2 interventions are that they are going to be targeted, focused on specific behaviors or specific social emotional needs. They're going to be efficient. They're often delivered in small groups. So think 3 to 10 students. But again, it's individualized. So it's whatever the student needs. It's going to be data driven. More supports or adaptions to the supports are identified through data. And that's collected everywhere. Attendance, teachers, office disciplinary referrals, parental input. You can also think of it as structured and systematic. It's going to be using established evidence-based data-driven protocols. And there's going to be that progress monitoring, frequent check-ins, review of data to assess effectiveness. So now that you know that, what does Tier 2 actually look like? Here are a few common strategies, and we'll start by talking about what they look like at school, followed up by what you can replicate as parents at home. If this intervention is something that your child is already using at school or something that you see yourself speaking with the school team about, here are also some tips and tricks that you can use at home to help teach the skill, replicate the skill, generalize the skill. So the first one is lovingly referred to as CICO, check in, check out. And maybe this is just my personal opinion, is one of the most common Tier 2 supports. This could look like your child checking in with a trusted adult each morning, maybe setting a few behavioral goals for the day, and then checking out again at the end of the day to review how they did. And maybe best practice is asking the child how they think they did before providing that feedback to them. This helps build positive adult relationships, increase feedback, motivation, getting that child to then express themselves, what was hard for them, what they think they did well, giving them the tools for emotional language And it also allows to set clear goals and routines. Parents often get this daily report so that they're in the loop too. And in some cases, it can look like a form that is sent home, or a journal, or if you use PowerSchool or Parent Square or Class Dojo, a note that comes home that kind of details what happened. They receive feedback and a point card throughout the day from teachers in some cases. Goals are absolutely defined and tied to school expectations. And this could be best for students who externalize behaviors, so disruption or attention. So if you'll remember those four functions of behavior, when we look at consequences or support before a behavior occurs, we're going to try to figure out this common behavior that's occurring. What function is it trying to communicate? So if a student is disrupting, they could be looking for attention. Or if a student is inattentive, they could be looking for escape. So how do we support them? So check in, check out. How could you use this at home? You could potentially create a simple morning and evening routine with expectations, checklists, and rewards. This could be something as high-tech and fancy as a Skylight calendar, or something as low-tech as just a simple form where the child has the list of things that they need to get done in the morning, and when they brush their teeth, they check it off with a pen, or they draw the shape that corresponds with the activity. So how else could you do it? Review goals. Throughout the day, maybe you check in, track behavior, and in the evening, you reflect. What went well? What's one thing that you are so proud of today? And it could even be a token board type system where you say, you earned 3 out of 4 stars today. Do you want to pick a show or have extra tablet time? Do you want to stay up 5 minutes late? Whatever that goal looks like for your family. Number 2, social skills groups. If a child struggles with peer interactions like sharing, taking turns, or conflict resolution, they might be invited to join a small group, and that could be led by the school counselor, behavioral interventionist. These groups might meet once a week to role play, talk, practice real life scenarios. I can say that personally, 2 of my kids have seen great success using social skills groups. And the purpose of this is teaching skills like conflict resolution, emotional regulation, and even friendship making. Because again, like we talked about in tier 1, we never just assume that kids came pre-programmed with these skills. Maybe they need to start from the very basic and be taught. So what could the structure look like? Maybe it's weekly, bi-weekly, and in some instances, I've seen them done monthly. And sometimes they use curriculum like Skills Streaming, Second Step, or Superflex. And this is best for students with difficulties in social communication or peer relationships. How could you adapt this at home? Well, they do make social skills games, I can tell you that, but you could also practice turn-taking, empathy, managing frustration, and communication through play, organic scenarios, made-up scenarios, and conversation. If you don't want to go crazy and buy social skills board games, you could start with something as simple as games that involve waiting or sharing. So that could look like musical chairs. That could look like Simon Says. That could look like red light, green light. And sometimes that really isn't about, can the child understand the rules? It can also be about, how does the child manage their frustration when they are not winning? Or when they perceive that another friend or another child could potentially be cheating or not playing the rules correctly. So how are we managing frustration in these types of social situations? You could read books that talk and then talk about how characters feel or how characters responded in the book. They have those little spot books where it talks about, you know, your little spot of anxiety, your little spot of calm, your little spot of anger. There are lots of mindfulness books. Another one, and this maybe is just a personal favorite of mine, but I like to use puppets to role play or rehearse situations. Sometimes I do it after the fact. Sometimes if I'm just really on it, I'll do it in advance. So for example, I had a son who was not the most receptive in soccer. He loved to play, but when things did not go his way, or maybe he thought that a perceived slight, someone didn't pass the ball to him, it might cause certain reactions. So we would pretend play, or I would, soccer with the puppets, or at a foosball table, and I would say, that was supposed to be my turn. And it was actually really interesting to watch how much my son, even at 7, was paying attention to how I responded as the puppet, and then how the other puppet responded to me. And you could see the cogs and the wheels turning. And it made me really recognize that sometimes when I say, oh my gosh, like, you know what to do in these situations, maybe I should take a step back and remember, maybe he does need more supports. Maybe it's not just, why are you so angry and how can I help teach you this skill? And number 3, behavior contracts or targeted support plans. So this could be something as simple as saying, if I do this, I earn that. Simple as saying, or putting it in writing if it's in their plan. This can help a student focus on 1 or 2 behaviors, like staying on task or raising their hand. And the purpose of this is to increase student motivation and clarity of the expectations that is put on the student. So the structure can look like an agreement between the student and the teacher, or something written on paper that outlines goals, rewards, consequences. So behavioral intervention plan. This is effective when students understand and buy into rewards, that we've set rewards that are appropriate for the child. And it's most effective when it's paired with reinforcement and frequent review. How could you use this at home? The same kind of thing, a simple agreement that outlines expectations, responsibilities, and rewards. If I could give any piece of advice that anyone listening to this would remember afterwards, it would be to include your child in creating this agreement. Just like you don't want to go to an IEP meeting with everything ironed out, and then the school district tells you exactly, doesn't accept your input, or doesn't listen to you when you want to tweak something because you're your child's expert. The child doesn't want to just be told what to do. If there's any way to make any kind of choices, especially when we talk about students who potentially have a pervasive demand for autonomy or pathological demand avoidance, the more choices that we can give kids, the better. Keep it short, keep it positive. If I get ready for bed without yelling, I'll get 15 minutes of reading with mom. And if you have younger kids or pre-reading kids, make a visual schedule. Number 4, self-monitoring tools. Students learn to rate their own behavior throughout the day and then reflect on it. This is a great way to build self-awareness and independence. It can look like students tracking their behavior using a simple checklist, smiley faces, a Likert type scale, rating from 1 to 5. And this is often paired, again, with reinforcement and frequent adult check-ins. This works best with students who respond to structured routines or visual supports. How could you use this at home? Encourage your child to track their own behavior and feelings. Maybe that's a journal, a feelings chart, a behavior rating scale. This is building independence by letting them score themselves and then discuss what they notice. Maybe you score and they score, and then you get together and try to figure out why, if there are large discrepancies. Just a little tip, you could use a dry erase board, like a chore pad, or they even have tech-friendly options now too. Number 5, in terms of supports that could be used for Tier 2 students, is mentoring. The purpose between that is building a relationship with a trusted adult to provide encouragement and guidance. This can look like regular one-to-one sessions with a staff member, conversations focused on goals, behavior, academics, personal concerns. This could be best for students with trauma, low motivation, or even inconsistent behavior. How could you use this at home? Building one-to-one time with your child, that's not just about correcting behavior. And that can sometimes be very, very difficult. So we always want to do connection before correction, which again, also can be difficult. So that can look like saying things like, oh, I noticed that you put your dishes in the sink, even though you'd ask them to do five other things in addition to putting their dishes in the sink. But before you correct, you want to try to connect. Other things that you can do is pick a consistent time daily or weekly for hangout time. And that's when you're not going to say, oh, I'd like to talk to you about what happened at school today, which is definitely something that I do that I need to work on, is I will approach my child and say, hey, do you have a few minutes to talk about this message that I received from the school principal? And I need to make a better effort at saying, you know, hey, I'm just going to connect with you right now. I don't want to teach you anything. I don't want you to learn anything from me right now. I just want to be here with you in this moment. Use this time to talk, play, let them open up without jumping in to fix it. Again, something that I could work on. So outside of tips, tricks, strategies, how do schools decide who needs Tier 2 supports? That looks like schools using data from teachers, attendance, classroom behavior, office referrals. Then they match the student with the appropriate Tier 2 strategy, like those that we used above. And again, that should include parental input. And it's okay for you as the parent to ask, hey, what supports are in place for my child's behavior? Especially if you notice changes or you're getting reports of concerns from teachers. How can you as the parent partner with the school? As parents, we play a huge role in Tier 2 success, and here's how. Stay informed, stay in communication regularly, keep the conversation going about what's working at school, what's working at home, how can we marry the two, and celebrate the wins. When your child meets goals, celebrate them. It helps build confidence and keep that momentum going. And remember, Tier 2 is not a punishment. It's support. The school sees your child's potential and just like you wants to help them succeed. Let's talk a little bit more about choosing the right Tier 2 support. So schools will use a decision-making protocol that considers, like we spoke about before, the functions of behavior, sensory, escape, attention, tangible. It's going to look at student strengths and preferences. It's also going to look at what did we try before? And this is a key piece if a child is moving up to a different school. So for example, if you're moving from elementary school to middle school, or if you're moving from middle school to high school, these are those things. What did this other school try that we don't want to get lost in translation, especially when students are going through that big transition? And as always, when making decisions about our students, parents and guardians should always be involved and brought into the conversation. All right, that's your crash course on Tier 2, positive behavioral interventions and supports, the middle of that triangle. Next episode, we're going to talk about Tier 3, part 3 of our 3-part series. When students need those most individualized, intensive supports. So the very tip of the triangle, which is just some students, a few students. And how that can work in connection with behavioral intervention plans, 504s, and IEPs. I hope that this helps you better understand your child's school supports and behavior. Until next time, remember, all behavior is communication. Thank you so much, everyone out there, for listening in. If you are in Idaho or planning on moving to Idaho and have any questions on systems or services for children with disabilities, please consider reaching out to us on our website at IPUL Idaho. That's IPULIdaho.org, or by calling us at 208-342-5884. Be sure to tune in next time. Until then, this has been Unlimited Parenting.
Thanks for listening.